I am the moderator for our forum tonight. I'm Arnie Ohawks, and I will be hopefully helping you all to have a good open discussion. A few words about forums for those of you who have not been to Holden or have not been to forums before. The format of this time together that we have in forums is slightly different from what you're used to in other Holden Village presentations. Normally, there is not very much presentation of material. It's rather a chance for you to share your ideas, ask questions that others can maybe speak to on some topic that we hope is of interest to all of you and that most of you have some concern for and some feelings about. A free exchange of ideas is what we are interested in at a forum. More than anything else. I will play the role of moderator this evening, which basically means I will try to keep discussion going, try to keep you on track, also try to encourage you and keep encouraging you if needed to share ideas in such a way that they are not threatening or put-downs to other people. If you are able to phrase your comments or your opinions using I statements, I think, or I believe, or I feel, or a question I have about this, that's helpful to others because then they feel more open to simply share their feelings and their ideas without feeling threatened or without feeling that they perhaps have to be an expert on a subject or a topic or something like that. So if you just remember those. We do try to stick to with a time limit at forums. We give ourselves about an hour. We're starting a few minutes late. It's about 9:05 or so. There is a comp line service at 10:15 in the Village Center. At 10:05, I will simply bring our forum to a close. And if you want to keep speaking with each other after the forum's over, that's fine. But we will stick to that time limit so that we respect that ground rule for each other. We want to hear your ideas. We want to give you a chance to exchange. Ask you to be as brief as you can in making your point. Also ask that as you get in conversation with one another, you do permit other people to break in at some point. Often at forums, comments are such that you might be addressing something back to a person that has spoken, and there may be a need for going back and forth once or twice to clarify a point between you, but we don't want it to just become a debate or an exchange between two or three people. We do want to encourage as many of you as possible to express ideas or ask questions. Our topic for tonight is American aid to Nicaragua. I'm not going to say a great deal about the issue. I would like to just make a few comments in terms of that as a forum topic. I picked that as a topic for this evening not just because it's something that's controversial. I think we're all aware of the fact that it is controversial to a degree. For most people. I chose it because it is of great interest to us at this time in our country. It's also an issue that has caused a lot of people to do some hard thinking in terms of the appropriateness of Christian response to this kind of a question. So I think it's a very appropriate topic to bring up at a forum within the setting of Holden Village. It is a question that raises faith issues for many people and perhaps has for you. And it would be exciting if we could see some of those dimensions come into our discussion as well. There have been some things happening on that even since I've come to Holden. Maybe in some of our discussion we can find out from some of you exactly where it's at. I know just before we came up, the House did approve some kind of financial aid through the humanitarian means to Nicaragua, the kind of vote that had been voted down previously. So there's kind of a change, and I know that has brought response on the part of some people. There may have been some change that some of us who are at the Village for the last week are not aware of. So some of you can maybe bring us up to date on that. Some of you who are here I know have been to Nicaragua, and that might be interesting and helpful for us to hear about some of that. Again, if you can frame that in such a way that you can just share with us impressions or feelings that you have come away with because of your time there, as a, again, something to share with the group. Other than that, I have no particular comments and no statement, opening statement to make. You will have to lead on and respond to each other as we get into the forum. Does someone have a lead-in comment and opening statement that they would like to make concerning the whole question of American aid, American relationship to what's going on in Nicaragua in particular?
I'll make it.
Jerry?
And I think that before you can start talking right now, I think it's important to have some view of where Nicaragua has been. And I think it's important to keep in mind that for 4.5 centuries, the people of Nicaragua, as all Central American countries, have been dominated, exploited, and used. From the Spanish in the beginning, which took it for gold, which gave the land not to the peoples, but to Spanish people or warriors or others who were foreigners, gave them large land in the States. We set up a policy that those countries couldn't produce things for themselves. They had to raise raw materials and ship it to Europe, Spain, or wherever, and turn buy back finished goods so that they never developed really any industry or anything. That the church was an ally of exploitation, saving souls, but basically seeing the people as little children, as peasants, and in subsidiary ways. And then even after independence came the last century, that the people in Nicaragua really, it wasn't independence or a revolution where people had some expression of their needs and desires, but rather displaced foreign leadership with an indigenous leadership of 2% or 5% or 10% of the population that ran it for their own private interest and private benefit, never to the benefit of the people. And it's only been in the last 10 or 20 years that a lot of real ferment has been underway in all those countries where people in their own hands are trying to take some control of their own lives. The church has been somewhat aligned with that as they've adopted a new attitude towards how the people can run things for their own benefit. And Nicaragua is one country where 6 years ago a true revolution took place in which the traditional control mechanism of a few elite people that more and more centered in just a very few families was overthrown, and a pretty broad-based group of people came into control of setting up policies and government action. So that whatever we think about aid, I think we do have to recognize that for the first time people in Nicaragua have some opportunity of sharing in some way in what they want to do in their own country for the first time. I think.
I sense a silence where a number of people are on the edge of their chair and nobody quite knows how to break the water. Why is it that American involvement or American aid to Nicaragua is in fact controversial at this time? Why do some of you feel, what's the controversy that some of you feel is at heart? I know some of you are troubled by what is in fact happening. What is the trouble that you feel?
Well, isn't it a democracy that's been elected by the people, and the contras are these six ruling families who want to get back in power? Isn't that what the future is?
Yeah, a real small amount of people, yeah.
And so our funding is going to the contras aid, where we have aided the ruling government, and now it's not...
Can you speak up, please?
The ruling government, the present democracy, isn't affirming itself as a colony to the United States as far as trade. And so we want to go back to the countries who can consume more U.S. or can assist more U.S. consumption, Western ways of living. I don't know why I've never been there, but there are some people who've been there. That's why I don't know what to say.
I think, for me, part of the problem is just the confusion of the facts, and that kind of raises that, is that there's so many different, quote, facts, depending on who you want to listen to, whether it's Reagan's philosophy or theory of why aid should go, or those who are opposed to that philosophy and why aid should not go to Nicaragua. And I personally tend to lean very, very much in favor of not funding or sending any kind of aid to Nicaragua. But then I say, well, I'm just choosing those type of facts or whatever it is, that belief system that is wrong. And I try to look at the other side and say, why do other people support the aid to Nicaragua? And my rationale for right now is just the fear that that will become communist, and then communism will eventually overtake America. Seems to be one of the prevailing attitudes for not sending aid. And I guess I can try to respect that fear that some people have. I don't share that fear. I think part of the problem for me is just trying to determine what exactly are the facts and who to listen to.
Who to believe.
Who to believe.
Yes, Ed.
I used to think that, and every other day I still do. But about 3 hours ago, Gary was doing his shtick here, of all things, on the new physics. And something he said there is still stuck in my head that helps me make a little more sense out of Nicaragua than I think I've got. And I think I've got my sense. I got my picture. But he talked about paradigm shifts. That's a fancy word. He was quoting Thomas Kuhn's book that everybody has to quote at least once, and he's giving an intellectual paper these days. But Gary, are you here?
He just stepped out.
Where is Gary when we need him?
He had a paradigm shift.
Okay. He said probably a paradigm lift over there or something. But you know, in super simple language, a paradigm is sort of, you know, the picture you have ahead of time into which you put the facts. Or maybe the graph paper on which you lay your facts. And it seems to me one very simple conflicting paradigm on Nicaragua is the big picture, maybe two big pictures, is the world tension today east-west, us and the Russians, or is the big tension today and what's going to really shape the future north-south? Which is in effect saying the have-nots and the haves, or is it us two being haves, the Russians and us? Or is that the basic picture into which you put the fact? And you obviously get two rather completely different pictures, even if you put all Reagan's facts, you know, into the north-south picture.
The message that I hear more often is the east-west. I think that's what the media and the administration.
Oh, correct. It's a conflict about paradigms, even at that very simple level. And what did you tell us, Gary, about paradigm conflicts? You can't prove them?
That's what I said, yeah. And I really agree with your interpretation, too. And in fact, that's what I was thinking of. When I thought of, do I have anything to offer tonight? It was exactly what you just said, so I'm not going to say it again.
But you know, that last little quote, the last line of that quote you gave us said that people finally adopt paradigms, not because someone has proven it to them, but by faith, or something like that, you said. And
that somehow, you know, the data or an experience has somehow just come upon you to say, wait a minute, this is the way to make sense out of that stuff, not that way. And you can't prove that to somebody. You can sort of testify to them and tell them what happened to you and why you got this paradigm shift. But, you know, you can't program it in anybody, just like you can't program Christian faith into anybody.
And I think
that too is a paradigm shift when someone moves from being one kind of a believer to a Christian believer.
And for me, that's what's frustrating by whatever stance a person takes. If they think that is the right, complete, true, absolute true stance, then that's frustrating for me. You know, whether it's, you know, a pro-Reagan send aid or a complete anti-Reagan, either stance, if it is seen as the absolute truth, is frustrating for me, and I hate to be that boxed in. You know, I want to leave some openings for either side, or a paradigm. I like that. That's a good analogy.
I don't know if I understood completely the meaning of paradigm, but I did catch what Gary said about cultural bias is being built in, or yeah, cultural or different social biases being built into science, and I think that's true of social science as well and political science. And I've had opportunities to speak to different groups about stories and experiences that Arthur Kennedy and Barack Obama and Kennedy. What I found is that the people who will be most stridently concerned about things like Marxism or socialism or loss of free market and everything, I think that what I realize is that between our culture and Nicaraguan culture, that completely different things are meant by the same language almost. I wouldn't go so far as to say completely different things, but I think when you talk about a third world country and free enterprise, it's nonsense because there's no way in third world situation free enterprise exists in the way that we've experienced it. Or socialism, I think when you talk about socialism or Marxism and the kinds of Marxist language that's used a lot in Latin America and especially a lot in Nicaragua, that people on the right in our country tend to hear that language and their alarms go off and they go crazy because they get a picture of communist Russia and assume that that's what Nicaragua is working for when in fact I believe they're working on a completely different model. So the language is there, but the meaning can be quite different because of a different history and different culture. And I think that's a big problem because those are catchwords that kind of put red flags in people's, you know, Marxist, Leninist, all these horrible things that just really light people's fires.
I'd like to build on that. There's also a dualistic thinking that gets in the way of working things out too, that even if you see things east-west or east versus west or north versus south, you're still caught in sort of the same kind of trap that it's sort of us against them or them against us or something. What's going on in Nicaragua, it seems to me, and I haven't been on there either, there's really a third alternative emerging. What they're striving to create is a social order that's different from anything that's ever existed on the planet. They don't want communism, they don't want capitalism, they want some kind of hybrid, and some kind of thing that's even better than either. They have a new vision of the type of government that would be appropriate for their country and maybe appropriate for other third world countries too. That doesn't stand in defiance of the US and the Soviet Union, but has a different relationship with both those countries than we're willing to allow them to have. More of a relationship and less dependency and more self-sufficiency within their country. And they've made remarkable strides in that direction, considering that they're under incredible duress due to invading forces all the time and tons of money compared to what they're able to afford being spent in tap up on them. I mean, if we had those kind of attacks going on in this country in proportion to our population that they have going on in their country in proportion to their population, can you imagine the kind of repression we have to have in this country to be able to deal with that kind of military hostility within our borders? It would just be appalling. So anyway, I think they've done a remarkable job of trying to carve out this third alternative, but we never hear about it. Or it's really hard to get information about it. But what they've done, what their political philosophy is, what their educational philosophies are, what their agricultural philosophies are, what their market philosophies, the way they want to deal with their people, that's all not dealt with in our press very well at all. You have to get it from people who go there and, you know, ferret out the information to the church, through Sojourners, through, you know, other sort of alternative types of publications.
Given some of the comments now that you've shared in terms of the difficulty of knowing what voices to believe or who to trust, given an awareness of the shift of large perspective, the paradigm shift, this kind of a thing, let me ask your responses to, again, kind of the basic forum question here. What do you feel should American involvement be in Nicaragua? What should be the nature of involvement, the aid, if any? What should be our participation as a country or as a people in that situation, given what we can know and what we cannot know? Maybe given some of these large shifts that are taking place right under our noses as well. What should be our involvement? The House of Representatives voted yes to a certain kind of aid and involvement. Would a no vote have taken care of the problem? Is there some, yes, ma'am?
Well, when you're down there talking to the people in Nicaragua, and in fact all the Central American countries, they say, tell your government to stop sending arms into the area. That if they want to send something, to send food, send medicine. And that's where their great need is. And the people would like to have the freedom to go ahead and work out their own government. You know, the Nicaraguans had democratic elections, and they were good elections. There were observers from all over the world there that certified that. And it was kind of interesting. They had polling booths in many, many places, as opposed to El Salvador, where they had very few. And therefore, when the news pictures came from El Salvador, you had great lines of people because they had to vote, they had to have this mark on their hand and everything, so they were standing in long lines. And the boxes in El Salvador were Lucite, where the vote was not secret. Whereas in Nicaragua, they were opaque boxes, and there were lots of polling places, so there weren't great long lines. And the people say, you know, we've had our election, and maybe our government isn't perfect, but it's our government. We've elected them.
Translating that into our involvement in Nicaragua, you would say no aid of any kind?
But the thing is, private groups from the United States are sending aid there. And a week ago Sunday, I talked at a little church in Toledo, and the pastor had published around that I was going to be there and talk about Nicaragua and Central America. And some member of their congregation said, well, you know, our son in the army is in Nicaragua. And the pastor said, no, that's against the law. And she said, oh, yes, he is. He even sent pictures. And so the woman got out the pictures. And it turns out he is in Nicaragua, and he's building an airstrip in Nicaragua. And the pastor was so upset that he went home and called up the senators from Ohio. And they were shocked, and they said, well, no, that isn't true. And if that's so, he isn't a very good soldier, so, because he shouldn't be talking about it if he's on a secret mission. But it just goes to show you that we are deeply involved.
I like what Bishop Tutu had to say. He said he thought that our administration's policy should be reversed between the way we were responding to Nicaragua and the way we were responding to South Africa. Here in this nation where people are labeled under apartheid and we want to be normal, we see have all the relations with them, and yet with Nicaragua, the struggling to feed these people, we have all this hostility. There are a lot of alternatives. The problem with our administration's approach to it is that there are so many good alternative policies. There's, you know, there are a lot of people offering that are no dummies, that are offering different alternatives, and our government is not considering any alternatives except for military approach. And it's really hard for me to talk about just the government's aid to the Contras, because as Nancy said, if the aid was cut off tomorrow, and people you talk to that work in the conflict zones in Nicaragua say that, so it virtually would not make any difference for a long period of time, because private groups are funding the effort quite well. But the issue is what direction policy will take. It's like, what kind of message are we sending our nation? What kind of message are we sending their nation? What kind of message are we sending the whole world? And the first vote with the Senate and the House, that was a message that perhaps there was some room for negotiation. And then the trade embargo mixed the messages. And so, you know, and now we've got this other vote even mixing it more. But it's all tied together. You know, you've got the inconsistencies between a tremendous aid to El Salvador, where people are dying daily in horrendous ways, you know, under a terrible human rights situation. And then we've got us blocking loans that are to help people in Nicaragua. And then also the impact of what we're doing against Nicaragua and Honduras is horrendous for what's happening to people's lives in there. We're turning Honduras into a military colony so that you have a rise in human rights abuse. The whole policy is so very much tied together that, to me, it's really, it's kind of nonsense. I think it's because the press has made such a political football out of it that the Contra aid has become a big deal. It's really unfortunate that what's going on in Guatemala and Honduras and El Salvador is being well publicized. But the church is partly responsible for that. And people who believe that people in the churches that have come to visit them and have come back and written to their senators and made an effort to talk about it have been a fairly direct force in avoiding an outright invasion or something like that. And that's something that they've expected for a long time. I'm sure Nancy and Judy, you know, talked to people that have bomb shelters there and stuff. It's really comfortable to be in a country where you see bomb shelters built where people have, been in such a way where they're daily expecting your country to invade them as an aggressor. But I think it's really unfortunate that the Contra issue has been separated out and there's this big fight and everybody in the nation knows about it and yet no one's talking about what the ramifications are for the whole area. It's tremendously tied together and all that military focusing is tremendously unhelpful to all those nations.
By the way, I would speak in favor of far greater aid to Nicaragua than we've given so far, but not to the opponents of Nicaragua, and that's what we're really doing. We're giving it to the previous dictatorial forces of Somoza and those groups. It's not in the interest of Nicaragua at all. But the answer is not to do anything. The answer is to get enthusiastic about this new experiment in trying to find how a third world Central American country might make some kind of progress in its growth and development. It seems to me that there has been two models for those nations to follow. One has been the sort of developmental growth model that we in the United States and many of us in the West have pushed, and we fight it for the last 20 years or more, and it follows some free enterprise ideas and assistance and aids and bank loans, and this has not produced development in any of those countries. Anybody's been to Guatemala or Honduras or Salvador, they know that in no way are they beginning to solve their problems. The other model has been the Cuban experiment, And although it's done all kinds of things, and some of them are pretty good, and it's rather appealing to a lot of Central American people, but it's been at the cost of a one-party state, a lot of controls and things that we can't go along with. But Nicaragua is a third option. That's neither one of those two. It's different because it has a multiple set of political parties that are involved, not a single party such as Cuba had. It's different because there is a business, a private sector, a large sector, still over half of the production is in private hands. That's different than in Cuba. And they're intent on keeping that. They want to keep it. And the main reason it's different is because the church is heavily involved in that revolution. It was not in Cuba. In Cuba, the church was the opponent of what took place, and it did everything it could to resist it. On the other hand, but because of the last 20 years, what's happening in the church, largely in the Catholic Church, there is this changing attitude where the church, instead of identifying with the wealthy and the elite, sees themselves committed to the development of the poor and the improvement of the poor. And so all these factors are part of that experiment in Nicaragua, and nobody quite knows what is happening. And if we weren't so stupid that instead of opposing it, if we would assist it, we might not force them into the one of these two options, force them into the same role that we feel is not good in Cuba. But that's exactly the way we're pushing them. We're starting to eliminate the option of a multi-faceted democratic development. So I think we ought to be excited to assist a model of development that we could live with and be happy with, and which may prove a model to all these other countries in Central America.
Yes, sir.
I'd like to see the same. I'd like to see the same thing in terms of, I'd like to see aid. However, I know it's a dream world because the United States has never given any kind of decent development aid without completely botching the job. And we've done it basically for our own self-serving interests. And I also believe that the Reagan administration is so incredibly belligerent towards Nicaragua that had the Sandinistas taken another year to pull off their revolution, never would have happened, because Ronald Reagan would have come to power and would have done something to prevent it. And so I'd like to see aid, but I'm just awfully skeptical of, it would be an incredible tactical reversal of anything we've done in the last 50 years.
I was neglecting our upper balcony. We're surrounded by a host of listeners. Elmer?
A couple of I statements. I don't believe everybody in the room agrees with what's being said. And I regret that we have become so didactic, so that I fear that any point of view other than the one being said presently gets to be voiced.
I have a statement, sir, that the aid that we've given countries, I know some of it's been bad news, but anyone that knows any about American history must really admire the United States and be proud of what we did with our Marshall Plan to Europe. That was a fantastic program. We can hold up our heads and be proud of it. We helped Europe get on our feet. We even were so kind and generous as to offer help to the Soviet Union on that thing. And I think most any European nation would say, thank you, Uncle Sam. And I don't believe there are any strings attached to that thing. I'm proud of that. I lived in that era. I was in World War II, and I feel good about that. That was not bad news. That was good news.
Yes, it's referred to as liberation theology that's been espoused here tonight. I read an article by a Catholic bishop, who was part of a papal response to the liberation theology being put out by the Central American priests, and what he said was, in a lot of words, but basically what he said was, they have replace the need for deliverance from the bondage of and the power of sin in men's lives with the, they see rather than that as being the main function of the church to help men be freed from the penalty and the bondage of sin. He said that the church in Central America has replaced that with freeing people from political oppression, meaning that once people are freed from political oppression, you know, everything's going to be hunky-dory. But he's saying, no, that's not the problem. The problem is the reason there is political oppression is because it's in the heart of man. It is a deep-seated, it's because of the deep-seated rebellion against the Lord that that even takes place. If you go to the source of the problem, which is really a person's relationship with God, that will take care of itself in time if enough people, you know, if enough people are willing to do the Lord's work. And an example of that, I can point to an example of that in practicality is our church has two churches in Nicaragua that are flourishing. And the reason is we followed Paul's exhortation to lean neither to the right, lean neither to the left, but to do one thing and one thing only, to preach Christ and Him crucified. And what's happened is the government hates, well, they don't like the gospel. It's they're faith, and I'm not sure if they're atheistic or not, but they're not Christian. And they, but they see the good thing. They see the good works that are being done by our people down there. They're dedicated to show Jesus to the people, and they can't deny it. And so, while Jehovah's Witnesses, Mormons, and others are being kicked out, they're allowed to stay because it says in the scripture, he who has peace with God, even his enemies are peace with him. And we're seeing some real good fruit down there because people are getting, in the midst of that oppression, they're at peace, they're finding that true peace which comes from God. And I think that's the real nature of the problem all over the world. And when these little flare-ups, big little flare-ups, are just but a symptom of the much greater problem.
I need to respond to a comment about that government not being Christian. When I was there, I visited Father Ernesto Cardinal and Ferdinand. Well, not Ernesto, Ferdinand, who was he's a Catholic priest, and he shared his involvement in the literacy campaign, and also his brother is Ernesto, and he's the Minister of Culture. And they have both come to the belief that they have found that they can serve God and their brothers and sisters by their positions in the government. And I don't know where you learned of it being un-Christian. I'm not sure where that has developed in our country.
Well, it's more the Sandinista leadership, you know, Ortega and others, not the the Catholic involvement, but the people from the Sandinista movement not affiliated with the church.
Well, I guess the use of the label Christianity.
What I'm saying is that the problem is not political, is what I was getting at. And I said that with some little interpretation because I don't, that's something I can't say for sure. But I'm just saying the problem is not political. The problem is spiritual. People want, what they want is freedom in their soul, freedom in their spirits, to be at peace regardless of whatever their circumstances are. When Jesus was on, they hailed him as a conquering political Messiah. When he said, hey, I'm not, this time around, I'm not the conquering Messiah, I'm the suffering Messiah. They fled. And he didn't come to overthrow the existing government. He came to he came to change the world through spiritual means and not through political means. And I think they're leaving, they're trying to go on their own understanding. It says in Scripture, trust in the Lord with all your heart, lean not on your own understanding. I think they're not going, they're relying on their own understanding to try to change things like we all have a tendency to do, and we don't lean on the Lord. And I think that's what's going on down there.
I think this is a really good example of how much disagreement there is over what's really going on in Nicaragua, even between Catholics and Catholics and Christians and Christians. And to me, it kind of comes back to over and over again, well, okay, there, no one really knows exactly what the truth is about the issue and the government's attitude towards churches and stuff. But I guess I wonder about what our support should be in as Christians about our government's response to that. If, in fact, the government has Marxist tendencies, or if, in fact, the government is hostile towards churches, should we then be sending money to provide forces to come in and cause harm to the structure, cause harm to civilians, and